This is Bill Alvarez of the Florida Soapbox, and my podcast is a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. Tired of looking for the so-called liberal media? Well, now you can really find it. Go to newmediarevolution.org, the Progressive Podcast Network.
Hey buddies, what's up? Godless Kinzer here, podcasting to you from LSA Anaconda near beautiful sunny Balad, Iraq. It's been another week, and you know what that means? It's time once again to hunker in the bunker for another episode of Watch It Burn.
Watch It Burn is dedicated to the memory of Sergeant Brian Brewster and all of our comrades who have fallen, from Captain Parker's Minuteman to the soldier of today. This episode seems to not feel right to me. It seems kind of disjointed and doesn't seem to have any kind of, it doesn't seem to flow right. And I'll just go ahead and put it up anyway so you guys can get what enjoyment you can out of it and maybe learn some things you didn't know. And I'm going to try to put something together with an actual plan that maybe it'll be up in the next couple days, hopefully, to kind of make up for this one, this poor effort. But, enjoy what you can. Thank you.
Welcome back, folks. Sorry about the delay on posting this one. Power had been out over in our housing area for 2 days, and that's where my internet connection is at. I had an episode ready to go, and I am glad that it didn't go up, that the power was actually out, because in the meantime, there, of course, has been very, very big news out of here. I know that some of y'all would like to hear me comment on it, but I'm going to talk about the Al-Zarqawi killing instead. I have two things to say on this issue. Actually, three. First of all, I read a lot of Iraqi blogs by the average Iraqis here, and they're, up until this recent revelation, they, most of them seem to be of the mindset that a majority of Iraqis did not believe Zarqawi was real, or that if he was, that he was actually still alive up to a couple months ago. And they believed pretty much that he was just a boogeyman made up by the Americans as a convenient scapegoat to have an actual enemy that we could point to as the bad guy. Which I think is an interesting and plausible theory, in my opinion. I believe it is very plausible. And I also note that a number of news sources a couple of years back had pointed out that the Pentagon had announced Zarqawi's death a number of times before, and had also announced that he had lost a leg, and that he had been killed in Afghanistan, various things like that. But, secondly, I would like to say the timing is great for the administration, because not only do you have the revelation of not just the Haditha massacre, but also the incident in Ishaqi, Ishaqi, if you'd like to look it up yourself. BBC has done some good coverage of it. There was also a third, I think there were three total, or maybe there were three other ones. There are either three or four investigations into U.S. service members killing children. At least three, possibly four incidents under investigation currently. And so you have that, and then you have the fact that pretty much everybody in the military's information was in the stolen data from the VA employee's house that was broken into, and that he had not been authorized to take the sensitive data home. So he's on administrative leave now, I guess, pending dismissal, him and his supervisor. But this VA employee took the stuff home, and then they said, at first they said it was only... about 50,000. Then they said that, about 2.2 million. They said, but it's not everybody, it's only people that, are people's information. You know, you're only in a high-risk group if you were discharged between this date and this date, or you submitted a claim between that date and another date, or the one they point out, though, is, or all active duty members who have enrolled in service members group life insurance, which anybody who's been in the military can tell you is pretty much everybody. I have never met anybody in my, what is it, about 10 years now? Yeah, in my 10 years of active duty, I have never met anybody who has not been enrolled in the SGLI. And it also is also the potential risk people are all guardsmen and reservists who have enrolled in SGLI. So information on veterans' dependents and the spouses of active duty troops may also have been compromised. VA officials said every person whose social security number was included in the lost data will receive notification from the department. This is, of course, according to 8 June Stars and Stripes, which was yesterday our time. I don't have today's. But so basically they're going to have to tell everybody that, yeah, your stuff was potentially stolen, and they have, in fact, issued us warnings telling us that to be on the lookout for phishing schemes in our email, stuff like that. Because I'm certain our official Army Knowledge Online or Navy.mil or Air Force.mil email addresses have been given out. Excuse me, or we're part of that data, I should say. Though I also would not rule out this guy taking that information home to possibly sell it to credit card companies or something. This being the pro-business administration, I believe that it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to believe that or to imagine this guy might be trying something like that. I mean, after all, we had a couple child molesters busted in fairly significant positions within Department of Homeland Security, so it's, I wouldn't be surprised if there's another criminal involved, if this was another criminal enterprise. But anyway, that's the second point on the Zarqawi killing, is that, you know, this, the timing seems kind of convenient, you know. And you have all this, you know, they have the investigations of killing of children and, well, unarmed women and children and elderly men, including one in a wheelchair. You have attention gathering over VA jerk-offs losing our personal information, getting it stolen, or, well, anyway, somehow, you know, releasing it, whether intentionally or not. And so they had their vote on the possible amendment to basically amend the Constitution to ensure that one class of Americans would not have an equal right as the remainder of the population, and that didn't work, so they didn't have that divisive thing to try to divert attention with. So what comes next? Ah, well, we can get rid of our big bad guy. Now I'm wondering, you know, if they're going to let Iran just remain the bad guy and try to pump that up, or if they're going to pump up another guy over here into supervillain status like they did with Zarqawi, who had been a really, really minor bit player. Actually had not been a member of Al-Qaeda until he began his operations over here, because according to Foreign Affairs magazine, or maybe it was Foreign Policy magazine, an article I had read a couple months back, Zarqawi really wasn't all that interested in attacking the U.S. until we came into Iraq. He was more of the Islamic fundamentalist guerrilla fighter who was concentrating on what they refer to as the near enemy, meaning regimes that are corrupt within the Muslim world that they were going to overthrow, because they were, these regimes were oppressive to their people and were not Muslim enough. And that basically we kind of exaggerated his importance until the reality followed the myth, because we sold him to the Muslim world. And they eventually began to buy it and believe our hype of him. And so we really did give him more power than he deserved, or that he probably would have had normally. And I also would like to point out that it's kind of interesting that, from what I've heard according to the official story, there were two 500-pound bombs I think JDAMs, I think they said, were dropped on the building he was supposedly in, this safe house. I have to say, if you've ever seen any of the after-action photographs and bomb damage assessments on buildings that have been hit by just one JDAM, he looked remarkably intact for somebody who had been in a building that had just had a half a ton of explosives detonated on it. So, I don't know. I'm always just suspicious by nature. And I know that based on everything I've read or heard or seen or tasted, touched, or smelled about the situation over here, just getting one guy doesn't solve the problem. I mean, when we captured Saddam, that didn't solve the problem. When we got two of them, when they gunned down Uday and Qusay, that didn't solve the problem. In fact, the insurgency didn't even... In fact, the guerrillas didn't even really let up very much during that time, or after that... In fact, the guerrillas didn't even let up very much, actually, after the two of them had been got. So, it remains to be seen what's going on and what's going to happen. I'd be interested in finding out more about what the foreign press is saying about this. I noticed on the Iraqi blogs that, you know, after seeing the body, they were all really happy that he had been taken out, and if indeed that was him, I think it is a good thing, because even if he was not necessarily as powerful as we portrayed him to be, he was, you know, still a freaking murderous scumbag that needed to be dealt with. And unfortunately, we kind of created the situation that spawned the likes of him in this area. But maybe, just maybe, we can find a way of taking them out, one here and one there, without creating any more of them. And this late in the game, I don't know how easy that will be. Seems kind of difficult. So, that'll be the last of it on my thoughts on al-Zarqawi, unless anybody wants to raise any more questions for the next episode, go ahead and give a call at 1-888-82-REVOLT, or drop me a line at watchitburn, one word, at godlesskinzer, KINSER.com, and, or you can call the fax number, and or you can fax the fax number, 120-MUTT-ANUS, as in Tog's Butthole. You know what, I have the number written down somewhere, but I don't even remember what the actual number is. Anyway, that'll be this segment. And to summarize, one, the timing is suspicious to me. Two, most Iraqis, according to their blogs anyway, a good portion of Iraqis, I should say, did not believe he was real to begin with. Or that if he had been real, he was not alive as recently as 6 months ago. And three, the body seems suspiciously intact for a guy who supposedly died in the way the official story reads. And, fourth additional point. Yeah, if he is who they say he is, then good riddance.
Hi, this is Shelley of the podcast Citizen Against Lies. I'm a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network, and you can check us out at our new website, newmediarevolution.org. Exciting things that'll rock the political world are coming soon. Meanwhile, subscribe to Citizen Against Lies on iTunes. Get some knowledge, get some power. See you there.
Urban combat, a quote, pressure cooker. Experts say psychological toll is no excuse for atrocities in Iraq. Allegations that U.S. Marines massacred as many as 24 innocent civilians in Haditha provide a dire illustration of the psychological stresses and moral tests that service members face in their fight against Iraq's unrelenting insurgency. This is a war without front lines against an enemy who wears no uniform. Death can come at any moment from the blast of a bomb hidden along a road or a mortar round lobbed onto a base. And often, in the angry moments after a comrade's life is ripped away, there is no readily identifiable enemy to confront. Only a foreign population in which friend, foe, and bystander may seem indistinguishable. Such is the nature of a guerrilla war. And it's a guerrilla warfare that is the type of situation that tends to lend itself to these kind of incidents. Let me see. I was talking about this. While no one is arguing that such pressure is an excuse for wartime atrocities, there are clear signs the mission is taking a psychological toll on U.S. troops. An early study of veterans returning from the Iraq War found 1 in 6 showed symptoms of depression, anxiety, or post-traumatic stress disorder. A more recent study found that 1 in 3 Iraq veterans has sought help from a mental health professional. Many of the U.S. troops in Iraq are now on their second or third tour of duty in a conflict that has stretched beyond original expectations. Some have been forced to remain in the military longer than their original enlistment period. I think everybody's aware of the policy of stop-loss in about a month or so. Actually, no, in about a week, I'll be past my original ETS date and end of term of service, and will be on my stop loss. And I myself have sought mental health counseling when I was home from this last time. I didn't see anything that, you know, was overly traumatic. None was over there. Nothing. I mean, not even close to some of the crap we dealt with in Haiti, with dead bodies and drive-by shootings and stuff like that. You know, it was, and that wasn't even all that bad, really. That was just, you know, just stress, basically. It wasn't, you know, a huge traumatic thing. But what I was being seen for was more just a generalized anxiety that I believe, even the counselors wouldn't really buy it. I believe that a lot of it was caused by moral and ethical dilemmas over the legality of this. And I basically was just having symptoms like, before I had went to come over here the first time, the wife and I used to have regular barbecues with the neighbors and used to hang out on the back porch with them, you know, drink a few beers here and there and, you know, grill up some food and just hang out and have a good time. And after I got back, I just did not want to be around people at all anymore. I was having memory problems, concentration problems that I still have off and on now. But none of it's anywhere near as bad now that I'm over here again as it was when I was back home. And now my counselor had theorized that it was pretty much just an anxiety disorder brought on by not specifically traumatic events, but just a constant state of elevated stress for an extended period of time. They didn't prescribe me anything or anything like that, though when I first got here I was having sleep problems. And I did get prescribed some stuff for that when I was initially here, but eventually my sleep issues kind of resolved themselves after a while, so I stopped taking the meds and I've been okay. Haven't had any anger incidents or, you know, spontaneous rages like I had when I first got here. So, I don't know. We'll see how this all plays out and see how I do when I get back the next time. And back to the article, though. The Marine unit in Haditha was on its third rotation in Iraq when the incident allegedly occurred November 19th. The same month a year earlier, on a previous tour of duty, the unit had been engaged in fierce house-to-house fighting in the battle to retake Fallujah from insurgents. Dr. Arthur Blank, an Army psychiatrist in Vietnam and former director of a Veterans Administration counseling group who now treats Vietnam and Iraq vets in private practice in Bethesda, Maryland, said, quote, "The multiple tours just make the pressure worse," end quote. The Pentagon has yet to release its report on the Haditha incident. An investigation began in February after Time magazine sought comment on its findings that Marines in Haditha had executed non-combatants in homes after a roadside bomb killed a Marine. Among the dead were children and an elderly man who used a wheelchair, according to the magazine's report, which was published in March. Farther in the article, the military has also acknowledged it is investigating an incident in Hammamdia in which Marines allegedly took an Iraqi man from his house and executed him by the side of a road. That makes 4 now, in addition to the other ones. Many units in Iraq have faced similar circumstances. More than 2,400 Americans have died in Iraq, often from roadside bombs, but the units have not resorted to atrocities. Still, they have shared many of the same stresses and swirling passions. Greg Wilcox, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, said, quote, "They get attacked and ambushed all the time, and they want to take it out on somebody in some physical way, but you very seldom see the enemy." Wilcox is a consultant to the military on urban warfare and counterinsurgency operations. West Point Professor Major Peter Kilner has done research on combat stress, said the military relies on ground level leaders, especially the lieutenants who command platoons and sergeants who run squads, to keep those passions in check. The difference between soldiers doing the right thing when they're off on the edge and falling into the abyss is leadership, Kilner said.
Pushing papers at Citibank.
If I seem rather subdued about this topic tonight, folks, it's because I think I'm just outraged out. I just have lost so much frickin'... I have lost so much of the outrage just over how much more is coming out. I mean, killing children, for God's sake. It breaks my heart. It really does, and it just... It wears on me. It beats you down thinking of stuff like that happening. You know, thinking and realizing you're wearing the same uniform as the guys who are doing that. I continue to do my job as professionally as I can, but it's hard. It is really hard to hold on to a sense of dignity and honor when that is the type of thing that my uniform is now associated with, the flag I wear on my shoulder is now associated with in the minds of the people here. So I don't really know what else to say about it, so I'm going to take a short break. I'm going to move on to something that I know will be more pleasant for me to talk about, and I'll be a bit more animated and probably a bit more entertaining for y'all.
There's talk of perhaps demonstrating in front of the Capitol or here or there around the country to show that the Union is occupied by people who happen to be patriots. And patriots do not like this government. This is an unpatriotic government. This is a government that deals openly in illegalities, whether it is attacking a country which has done us no harm, two countries, Iraq and Afghanistan, because we now believe, not in declaring war through Congress as the Constitution requires, but the President. Well, I think there are some terrorists over there, and I think we got to bomb them, huh? We'll bomb them. Now, we've had idiots as presidents before. He's not unique, but he's certainly the most active idiot that we have ever had. And now here we are, planning new wars, ongoing wars in the Middle East. And so, as he comes with his State of the Union, which he's going to justify eavesdropping without judicial warrants on anybody in the United States that he wants to listen in on. This is what we call dictatorship. 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 And it is time that we object.
This is Jay from the Best of the Left podcast. You've been listening to a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network, found at newmediarevolution.org. Never underestimate the power of a small group of highly motivated people.
There's a lot of anger directed at my fellow soldiers who went crazy that day, and I'm just real sorry that my crew could not have done more. I'm extremely sorry for my fellow Americans for what happened. It wasn't right. It wasn't war. And I pray to God something like this never happens again.
That was Hugh Thompson himself speaking on the documentary The Sound of the Violin at Me Lie. Might want to go check it out if you can find it. Here is a interview from Democracy Now! Back in January, about a week after Hugh Thompson died after a long battle with cancer. His door gunner at the time, Lawrence Colburn, is recounting some of the events of that day.
At that point, Glenn Andreotta spotted an earthen-type bunker with some faces peering out of it. And there was an approaching squad of Americans. And Mr. Thompson decided, and we all decided, that if we didn't do something within the next 30 seconds, these people would die. So he landed the aircraft in between the advancing American troops and the people in the bunker, went over and spoke to a lieutenant, and told him or asked him how we could get these people out of the bunker. They were obviously civilians. And the lieutenant replied he'd get them out with hand grenades. Mr. Thompson, who was outranked by this lieutenant, actually gave the lieutenant an order, told him to keep his people in place. He had a better idea. And I think he told him, if you fire on these people when I'm getting them out of the bunker, my people will fire on you. So he went over to the bunker himself and coaxed the villagers out. And we thought there were two or three. There were nine or ten. And we were in a small three-place helicopter, and all three seats were occupied. So we had to call down a gunship and use it as a medevac to remove these people from the area, take them down the road, and then the gunship came back on station. After that, we went back to the ditch. Glenn Andriotta spotted movement in the ditch. Mr. Thompson landed again. Glenn and I got out of the aircraft, went to the ditch. By the time I got there, Glenn was already in the ditch. He retrieved a small child and handed the child up to me. And we carried the child to a hospital orphanage a few miles away, and Mr. Thompson left the child with a nun and let her know that his family was probably all gone, so take care of him.
That's about all the time I want to spend on massacres this week, so I'll leave it at that until next time.
What happened? Someone set up Azkaban. We get signal.
What?
Main screen turn on.
It's you.
How are you, gentlemen? All your base are belong to us. You are on the way to destruction.
What you say?
You have no chance to survive, make your time. Ha ha ha.
Sorry, folks, I couldn't resist. If anybody has a recommendation for a program, a freeware or shareware program that I can use to take audio off of a Flash animation or Shockwave, I can get another ridiculous song. The Hyakugojuichi, I think it is, Hyakugojuichi animation that has been on the internet for years now and is utterly ridiculous, but has a peppy little crazy-ass Japanese song on there that I have no idea what the hell it is, because I don't speak any Japanese, of course, but the animation is ridiculous and entertainingly primitive, so if anybody's got a recommendation for a program that will strip the audio from that, because I can take it off of WMVs and MPEGs right now, and I just need something to be able to do that one if it's out there. And then I will have more ridiculous crap I can use on the show. There's a lot of ruins here. A lot of ancient ruins and a lot of new ruins. And I just have to say that if I seem like I am still kind of downbeat, it is largely because I am really freaking tired. The power is out over in our housing area. It's been out since about 3 o'clock this afternoon. One of the guys, he got off tonight, had his half night. And so he went back at midnight, and he came back over here and said it's still too hot in his room to sleep in there. The power's still off, so he came back to his shop to hang out in the air conditioning. I know everybody has sat on a toilet seat that is far too cold, but have you ever sat on one that is so hot it's painful? Just a little aside there. The more tired I am, the goofier I tend to get with some of the things I talk about. And Oh, sure, Dave. Everybody says, you know, be Mr. Hardcore Grunt and go to the shitters that suck instead of walking the extra 50 meters or so to go to the ones that are air-conditioned where you can sit on a nice, cool toilet seat. But when the power is out, those toilet seats are not in an air-conditioned building anymore. They're in a metal trailer sitting out in the sun. But that's beside the point. The fact is that the portable shitters, the honey buckets, as I call them, because of the brand name that they were under in Hawaii when I was there, they are only a few meters from my door. So I can just walk out my door and go use them and come back, and I don't have to put on my uniform top. I can just go out in my pants, t-shirt, and boots, go right to them and back, and I don't feel comfortable going to the other ones, going that far without having, you know, without being in uniform. It's not a big deal when you're at the honey buckets there, because basically you walk right out of the T-block blast barriers that are around the housing, and as soon as you step out, you're right next to one of the honey buckets. And seeing as my room is my second door in on a trailer that's right next to the blocks, it's pretty easy and convenient for me just to go to the honey buckets there. Even though it's like sitting in a little plastic oven that reeks of ammonia, and you know, feels like you're sitting with your head over a cat box that needs to be changed. I tend to use those instead. So I'm pretty tired from not being able to sleep too well because the power went out about 3 hours before I had to get ready for work, so I sat in there sweating that time, and I was too tired to get up and come into the shop here and sleep the rest of the time in my chair in the air conditioning. So we have a separate generator here at our hangar, so it's always fairly cool over here because we maintain our own electricity at the work area. In other news here, you won't hear as many alerts or sirens in the background anymore because our intelligence has found out that our alarms going off is one of the ways that the local guerrillas knew that somebody who had said they were going to attack actually had attacked us, and so they could, you know, have proof of what they'd done so they could pay them. So the command has decided basically that we're not going to have as many of the alerts as we used to, because, you know, it just kind of encourages them to keep firing on us. The guerrillas hear us constantly blowing off a siren every time a mortar round comes in, then, you know, it's really kind of incentive for them to keep throwing them. And it's not really like the alarms do much for us, because the alarm goes off after the round has already struck, so it's not any kind of advance warning. It's just kind of way of knowing, hey, that thing that just blew your arm off, yeah, that was a mortar. But I haven't heard of any casualties so far since I've been here, except from, you know, accidents around the work area. So, it's not like it's a big deal, a big issue to deal with where I'm at in this unit. One of the other guys from my shop is coming out here to us soon. Apparently he's getting on a plane sometime very soon. He had stayed back to have shoulder surgery. Last I had heard, they had screwed his shoulder up even worse, but I don't know if that was rumor control or what. So we'll see when he gets out here how he's doing, what kind of shape he's in, and what he's able to do and not do to help out. It'd be good to have another guy out here so I can get a day off again, finally. The other guy in the shop that's here with me, of the two of us, he's on leave right now, as I was back in, I think it was March. And, you know, it's his turn to go, which is cool. He could use the break. It's good for him to get back, you know, see his family for a little while. But haven't had a day off since the 20th, so that's kind of working against me. And it's not like I have a big problem here at work and it's all that strenuous, you know. It's just, you know, being here all the damn time, I don't get to kind of recharge the battery, so to speak. So I've been having a little forgetfulness problems here and there. Like this morning, my platoon sergeant was kind of pissed at me because I had flaked on doing the paperwork, doing the inspection on my vehicle, the weekly inspection, because I'm used to it being brought, the paperwork being brought to me by one of the NCOs in charge here, one of the leadership guys. They bring me the paperwork and I put it up on a magnet up on my little dry erase board so I see it and remember to do it. But being as I'm, you know, tired and getting a little bit burnt out, I forgot that I had not been given the paper, so anything to ask for it. So I ended up turning in my inspection at the very last minute, having to get called back in from my room to come back to work to do it. Which was not a big deal to me. I mean, hey, you know, I screwed up. It's something I do every week, so I should have remembered it. Should have remembered to ask somebody for it when it didn't come to me on the irregular schedule that it does. But so now I have a note written on my dry erase board for me to remember. And that should take care of that. The show is running a little longer than I had originally planned them to be, but hey, the last couple episodes have been a decent length. The roommate and I have cable now into our room that they're running Armed Forces Network to us free. Except that the TV he bought at the PX is German or Korean, I don't know, but it doesn't have the same type of connector that goes to the coax that standard American televisions have that they ran into the barracks rooms for us. So we get cable, we're thinking, all right, cool, we'll get to watch news and stuff, you know, and movies here and there, and see what's going on out in the world, what we're told is going on out in the world. But now we can't hook the TV to it yet, so we're gonna have to go one of these days. Hopefully, well, it's going to have to be him, because he's the one that gets days off. He's going to have to go over to the other side and see if the electronics bazaar has the right kind of connector. I know this is not the usual weighty subject matter or entirely relevant stuff that you guys are used to hearing from me, but I know a lot of you have been asking about daily life here and just little stuff like that, so I figured I would go off on that kind of that subject matter. And some of you will know what I'm referencing when I say, why don't they talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here. A horrible impersonation or impression. I don't do voices very well, but the sentiment there is what's important, and the words themselves to the right people will know that. An inside joke with some of my listeners. Folks, that's it for this week. I want to apologize again for the poor quality of that. This, what you just listened to, I put it together half asleep. I recorded it half asleep, and I'm going to go ahead and post it half asleep. So I promise there will be another one coming in just a couple of days to make up for this. I'm already working on some story ideas and some topics I want to cover. But if you have any topics you would like to hear me discuss... Oh, excuse me. Man, hiccups. But if you have any topics you would like to hear me discuss or hear my take on, go ahead and give me a call at 1-888-82-REVOLT. It's a voicemail line, so go ahead and just leave a message for me there, and I will address you on the show. I want to thank my donors, Jackie, and I don't know if I thanked Kelly already previously. Also, a number of other donors who have chosen to remain anonymous. And I'd like to also mention that if you go over to digitalfreethought.com/questions.htm, you can see a very interesting explanation of atheism from the point of view of an atheist who has thought things through. I was emailed that by someone using the name Doubter5, and I appreciate that from them. I'm going to go ahead and put a link to that on the blog now that I'm finally able to get to it. And I've also got... I'm going to do a segment in the next one that should be posted the next couple days on what I believe and why, or what I don't believe and why not, I should say. And also for Kelly, I would encourage all of you to throw a little love Leonard Clark's way. Leonard Clark was a blogger over here, a soldier who was over here, and got into some trouble with his command for his blog. If you go to... Let me open up this here, and... Oh, come on, where's that at? Ah, Censored Soldiers Archive. Okay, if you go to censoredsoldiers.blogspot.com, you can find some of his previous writings. And from when he was over here, you can see just how things were going for him at the time. And actually, part of it, one of the things he had written kind of makes it easy to understand how the mindset
could set in that would lead to things like the Haditha massacre and the incidents at Ishaqi and Hamandia. But so if you read his blog, his old blog, it's archived at censoredsoldiers.blogspot.com. You can find, I think it's on the 31 May, I think. I'd say about halfway to two-thirds of the way down that page, he talks about a suspected IED that he sees. He talks about, it's, 31 May 05 is the entry. You go down to where you see the paragraph that starts the first round, and you can, if you really read from there, you will get a good feel for how the mindset could develop that could lead to things like the massacre at Haditha, the incident in Ishaqi, and the other at Hamandia. But go ahead and check that out. And I'm going to have to look through my emails again for the link that Kelly had sent me, and I will go ahead and mention that on the next episode. But until then, folks, take care of yourselves, and like I said, you give me a call if you've got anything you'd like to hear me discuss on the show. Give me a call at 1-888-82-REVOLT and leave a message on the voicemail there. Or email me at watchitburn, all one word, at godlesskinser.com. Or you can fax me at 120-MUTT-ANUS. And so, until a couple days from now, take it easy, everybody. Hey, thanks again for listening, everybody. If you like what you heard, you can go ahead and go on my website, godlesskinser.com, K-I-N-S-E-R, and look over on the right sidebar. You'll see a little Amazon Honor System box. You can go ahead and click on there and make a donation to support this fine program. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week.